And welcome everybody to Off the Hook Overtime here on YouTube. It's Emmanuel, Kyle, I think you've made it over as well.
Yeah.
And to our people in the newly christened Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Hello.
And we have Gila.
Hello.
And we have Alex.
And good evening.
And we also have Jason.
Jason Scott, here to take all the oxygen out of the room.
Well, now, is there anything that... that hour went by fast, I got to tell you. Is there anything that you guys want to touch upon? More questions, dialogue, back and forth, experiences, things like that?
I mean, I did... Well, okay. So I will say, first of all, I remember meeting Jason Scott for the first time at Hope in 2016 and just fangirling in a really embarrassing way. And I just... Jason, it's... I can't deal with this memory because it was just so embarrassing. And talking about playing Carmen Sandiego with my brother on the emulators and just, oh my God, nerded out. And I just did it again. But also, I was curious. I had a question. Sure. Is there anything that you wouldn't take for the archive?
Well, so outside of the obvious class of like materially illegal material, of which there is a growing classification, believe it or not. It's not just the basics, but it's like there are now laws on the books that are worldwide, where if you have stuff for certain terrorist groups and you make them available on your website and you do not take them down in an hour, the ISPs in that country have to take you down, have to knock you out, and you have to take them seriously. So let's set those aside. Like, that's just law. That's just, nobody, you know, you shouldn't have that. And you can't be a website on the internet and take it. But then there's I can think of several. Usually what happens is somebody gets the bug and they want to preserve something. I'll give you two examples where I actually had to step in and be like, bro. One of them was the dude had recorded every traffic cam in New York City for like 2 years and wanted to upload it. And I was like, no. choose events. If there was a protest, if there was a parade, if there was a, whatever, the first day of congestion pricing, whatever, like something, give me a historical narrative to this, but we cannot freewheel grab the footage of hundreds of things and support that. Try to find supporters somewhere who will keep it for you. And then another guy had 1.5 petabytes of cam girls. And I was like, no, we're not going to do that. And he came back with a good one, which I was very fair, which he was like, we have used facial recognition and rescued 7 women from trafficking. And I'm like, cool. Still not going to give you the 2 petabytes. And, that. Usually it's when somebody was speculatively keeping air traffic control. And it's just, it's fine, but it's just it builds up and it's eating all this space, and space is still not free. And if it was, then we could talk about it, but it isn't. I had an idea that I proposed some time ago. And I talked to the people who kind of have run it, and which is, we have this thing online called software, SDR, a popular thing at Hope to discuss. And I'm like, man, I wish somebody set up a TiVo where it kept the last 2 or 3 days of the output of the SDR. And then January 6th or something would happen, mm-hmm. and we could say, cut it off, put it over here. It's 297 mm-hmm. gigabytes of audio recorded in this band, or 1 terabyte, I don't care, 9 terabytes. And we save it off, and we're like, here you go. Here's what the radio spectrum was like on this historic day. But it's kind of a nightmare for them technically, so they haven't done it. But man, that's an example where... Again, people want this world where you find things out and you go around in a 360 camera angle and you're like, and where did he walk from here to here? Here's the evidence. He walked from this building to this building. And it's like, these are very space intensive things. And like I said, some people salivate and say, well, if you were a real archive, why don't you take all the traffic cams on Manhattan Island for the past 2 years? And it's like, where's the check? I mean, I guess somebody could write a check and we would do it, because then they're supporting it. You know, they're supporting. So like mission wise, we would do it.
Well, how about you have something where, you know, they, if they really want it so bad, they already have it. You know, they can buy the 2 petabytes or whatever they need, put it on there, give you that drive, and you stick it somewhere.
Yeah, it's like they're naming a virtual wing of a museum.
Exactly.
And I think that we would be open to something like that. Again, a lot of so in these cases, it's not so much mission, but only mission adjacent in terms of like, this will pull us down economically in a way that would affect our ability to do our daily archiving of websites and the material that comes in. But that's all. I mean, I'm trying to think of something where I'm like, oh, bro, no. We will not make available when we become aware of it. Somebody uploads something that's like absolutely like harassing somebody. That won't stay public. That won't stay up for very long. Don't send us Marvel movies. We're set. Don't send us Marvel movies. Don't upload Avengers. You're just causing us trouble. Don't do it. Come on. Don't be an idiot. That's not what this place is for. That kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like, why are you doing this? Like, what are you trying to do? But on the other hand, somebody will like upload something where I'm like, until 17 seconds ago, I didn't even think about this. Now I love it more than anything. You know, it's Doug from Up, where it's just like, I just met you and I love you. where it's like somebody uploaded like 300 recordings of every time a radio station changed formats.
Oh, wow.
Like a recording of the day when, like, you know, whatever, The Boot became alternative rock or whatever. Stuff like that, or Last Days and then First Days. That kind of stuff where I'm like, well, I did not even know that.
Mm-hmm.
Or a lot of stuff I love is audio. So somebody, it used to be on American flights. They had actual quarter-inch tape, reel-to-reel, that they would set off at the beginning of a flight, and it would just play. But then, like, all the music you could hear through the armrest, and like somebody digitized those.
Right.
I was like, okay, I love you. Somebody did what was called a Minecraft survey. They went through hundreds and hundreds of Minecraft worlds and preserved them. And now we have that. We have like what's called the Minecraft Geographic Survey. And it's like, bless you. I love when a person out there gets a mission.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who are kind of like doing that work. For anybody, I will jump if somebody in the chat on our little thing here will hear that somebody did somebody has made a 3,600 item Friday Night Funkin' mod archive. And I'm like, didn't know anything about Friday Night Funkin' before I found it. And now we have a collection. And it's a game. It's a rhythm game that came out in 2020 on Newgrounds. And it's people have made mods for it over the last 5 years. It still hasn't come out commercially. And now we have a massive collection of it. And I'm like, well, bless you for doing that. Like, I love when somebody makes something their gig and they work on it and they really do their best. They really keep it preserved. They want the people to have it. It's not competing with Netflix or Spotify or something else for commercial products. They're never going to have this, right? Like, somebody had, I mean, a lot of these videos that I'm digitizing right now, these are like early 1980s audition tapes for child actors and commercial actors. And they're all reading, you know, verbiage from Anne Klein Says or Annie Says. and they're all reading it, and it's like, I'm Michelle whatever, and I looked them up, and some of them went on to careers, and some didn't, and I'm like, nobody was expecting this. Acne medicine from 1983? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I love it when somebody's like, I didn't know this was going to be a thing, and now it's a thing. That stuff is great.
Yeah, that's the thing. You never know what is going to take off. So those Minecraft worlds, you know, that could be the most popular thing on YouTube because somebody is into it and a billion other people are into it as well. It's important to acknowledge that and to try and preserve what you can. You know, there's one guy who digitizes North Korean TV, puts that on YouTube.
Have that too.
Now, my only complaint with that, he only does 3 hours at a time. Now, a lot of people, that's well beyond the capacity they can handle. I can handle the full broadcast day, which I think is about 10 hours. So if you guys have that, I would be set for the day just having that going in the background.
So sitting in, so the archive can emulate Flash. You can have Flash programs play in the browser if you go to an item. And somebody, there was a group in North Korea, and I'm forgetting their name. It was the Something Boys. And they were a government-hired propaganda group by North Korea to blast South Korea with Flash animations and games to try to win them over. And they preserved them, and they're on the archive. Somebody got their hands on, and I still don't know how that. I think what they did was they got a machine at auction, but it's like hundreds and hundreds of North Korean karaoke songs because I'm going to get it wrong. I would love if somebody said, you got it. I love it when people correct me and they're like, no. But like one glorious leader was super into karaoke. So they made a lot of karaoke. Then his son took over. His son thought karaoke was corruptive. Now there's no karaoke.
Wow.
The machines get thrown out. So there's all of this North Korean karaoke music on the archive. And people who listen to it are like, oh, these are just Chinese songs with new lyrics. Like they were just stealing Chinese pop songs and being like, we all need guns and butter, let's all do the, you know, like whatever. They were singing songs about how Korea was awesome. And I think this is why I was like hesitant to put a name on it. I think the current glorious leader thinks they're okay again.
Okay, so I think that would mean Kim,
they're back.
That would mean Kim Il-sung, the original leader, was into it. Kim Jong-il, who liked films, by the way, probably didn't like karaoke and purged that. And now Kim Jong-un likes karaoke and films. I think it's an enlightenment over there.
I think my favorite trivia about them is if one of the Kims touches an item, it's considered a holy relic. So a problem they have is they'll do a tour of like a science museum or a science area or something, and he'll touch the equipment. And if he touches the equipment leaves because it has to go to a museum because it's now a holy relic. So like, you gotta place your items carefully.
What if he shakes your hand?
Well, then you're a holy relic, I've been there. We've all been there. So one of the great things about the way the archive works is discovering people who make something their deal. And I have all these items that go, you know, somebody just uploaded 1,000 things. You should go look at it. And I go look at it, and it's either, no, this isn't good. This wasn't done right. And I'll talk to them about it. Or I'll be like, Jesus, this is 400 knitting magazines in Russian. Okay, bless you. I'll put you in the knitting magazine section. Or we have people who are uploading pulp magazines. That's another popular one, you know, the 1920s to the 50s and 60s of like, you know, Western tales of Westerns and space and romance. So there's a pulp magazine collection that's on there. And the old time radio is like next level. Once I went in and cleaned it, like I did a good job, I fixed it up. And we got so many complaints that I had to unfix it because there were these old people who knew, bless them, go to this collection, go down 7 levels, look over here, click on this. That's how you'll get the shadow. and they were going to bed every night listening to The Shadow. Uh-huh. And I screwed it up.
Well, I mean, if you clean it up, if you get rid of, you know, certain pops and static and things like that, it's not authentic.
I didn't. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't what we were even doing. This was just me saying I cleaned it up, like I put them into a little collection that said, here's all these little special showcasey ones. Here's the mystery. No, too much. Too much.
Wow. Yeah. I like to collect Bob and Ray recordings. I've told you this. But, you know, a lot of the recordings that are uploaded are hours long. I'd like for them to be, you know, in categories like, you know, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife, or One Fellow's Family, or whatever the sketch happens to be, just all those episodes. But nobody has done that yet. So if there are any people out there archiving that stuff, please do that.
On the archive, if you go to the front page, you say Old Time Radio Showcase. Mm-hmm. One of the nice things about the archive is that you can actually put an item in multiple collections. So my semi-bitter attempt to still clean it up is that if you go to, you know, archive.org/details/theoldtimeradio, you will find these collections where it will say, I see here one, it's like The Great Gildersleeve, and you click on it, and it's... oh God, whatever this is, right? Like hundreds and hundreds of episodes of The Great Gildersleeve. And it's all in one collection, and you can play it however you want with all of it. Like, I did it. I did it anyway. I just found a way to do it without upsetting the oldies, who were getting really unhappy about it. You know, and it was funny because at one point, you know, Brewster was like, we should have the old time radio people come and whatever to the thing. And I'm like, they are all dead. And not only are they dead, but like their family members, like their children who used to come to these things, now they're dead. Like, it's now to the point that like they just are starting to die. Like the son of the guy who played The Shadow, or the son of the guy who played whatever. So no, dude, we can't do it. All we could do is just keep providing old time radio.
I feel like artificial intelligence might be the solution here, where we can conjure them up and conjure their spirit up and talk to them that way.
You know, it's funny because, first of all, I love that I love that AI is a religious war. But more than that, you can clearly see the tinkerers versus the people who are seeing it as a threat. And I agree. If you have a boss who looks at a half-done nascent tech demo of anything, and who literally turns around while pointing at it, looking at his employees going, I can't wait to replace you with this. That's a bad boss.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if it's a dippy bird hitting a return key. Like, and he's like, oh, this is going to be you. I'm going to make so much money by not having you. Like, that's a bad boss. And so many of these bosses were like, oh, this showastic parrot that barely works in this tech demo, we're doing it, man. We're getting rid of the people. And I'm like, okay. And in limited fashion, we have done experiments with it. And where it really works out for is having a console where I'm sorting something. And the AI has looked at the item and says, based on what I know of items, I think this is a radio show. I think this is a political speech. But I'm not going, thanks, machine. Now automatically sort 105,000 items because I will be spending the rest of the year on doing that damage. But as an augmentative, hey, the weirdo summarization machine thinks it's a newspaper. Cool. Fine. But I'm also, if I can come up with a way for people to do it as well, I'll work with them on it. It's like, that's where I'm from. I'm like, oh, look at all this. But yeah, boy, it is. I remember going to the archive in 2021 and having a big con call, and I'm like, this is coming. And I can't tell you how to react, but I should tell you, you should have an answer. What you should have responses, because this thing is going to be a 100-foot wave, and people are going to demand to know where you stand on this. And so, you know, they've made various statements and stuff, but at least it was, you know what I mean? Like, it was a choice. And the thing that's coming... because, you know, I know, Emmanuel, you're always on top of the latest thing. Do you know about static recompilation?
I do not.
So this has been around, like AI and emulation and everything, for a long time. Basically, what you do is, with a lot of work, you can take a binary file, especially if you know it was written in a certain way, and you can push it back to source code. It won't be good source code. It'll suck ass, but you can do it. Wow. You can do it.
Okay.
Well, they figured out how to do it. So some people did it as an experiment with one game of Zelda on the N64 about 3 or 4 years ago. And then a new group made it work. And I think this is the one that's the watershed. They got Sonic Unleashed for the Xbox 360 to run native in the PC at 4K, 60 frames per second, completely configurable, everything. And I know this because the archive has a copy of Sonic Unleashed, and it was 3% of our bandwidth. And I was like, well, that's crazy. Well, that means that every Xbox 360 game is now up for grabs. And what would have previously be considered, what are you going to do? Bump up Halo 3? Like, what are you going to do with Halo 3? Now can be, oh no, we'll bring Halo 3 back on the PC, and someone will reverse engineer the server, and it'll just be Halo 3 is now playable again. And it's going to just, and that's for games. Games sell themselves. What are they going to do it when they start doing it with chatbots and programs and others, and it's just being slam ported up to the most modern era, and we're going to see this stuff come flying in? So I think we're on the cusp of a run, a gold rush against old code, old binaries, old works suddenly becoming viable, because they'll run in Mac OS X and they'll run in Windows 75 because they just work and the resolutions work and everything works. So it's going to be a revolution, man. And I expect by summer for the world to have a meltdown about it. So that'll be fun. And one of the side effects is that Xbox 360 stuff is like gigabytes for a disk image. So that's going to become a real hot thing for people to grab. It is going to be off the rails. And because, you know, what's better than a native running version of a program that is running at full resolution and everything against a library of items, many of which are so obscure, they just don't have enough support. Because who cares? Who's going to, you know, Halo sells itself. Sonic sells itself. But there were, like, great games and great programs for the Xbox 360 that will come roaring back to life and be competitive. Like, a Steam game versus this old game that was done for $75 million and bankrupted a studio 10 years ago. Yes, sir?
Go ahead.
There is also the issue when it comes to these games of competing with the studios themselves wanting to sell like worse versions of that. And you have fans like willing to put in the blood, sweat, and tears and labor to get something awesome, whereas the official version that you would download is like has a bunch of garbage added or microtransactions or something terrible. You know,
there are
many games with significantly less content because like rights to music has expired and things like that in their new versions that would have been in place in the old ones. And people who love the old games want the old games. And you know, right. I think you are definitely right. This is going to be, you know, we're on YouTube now, we can say shitstorm.
Yeah, it's going to be really something. So like part of what I do for the archive, part of my job as free range archivist is I kind of wander out into the forest and I just go, static recompilation, man, it's going to eat our bandwidth to living hell. We got to have, you know, one of the things I've really been forced to do over the years with the software capsules, you know, the collections of old games, is put them behind something called Logged In, where you have to register to download them at the archive, because people are hotlinking them with 4-pay sites. Like, hey, do you want this game? Give me $50. So we had to start doing that. It wasn't because we were trying to prevent people from having, you know, a given game or that we think it's whatever. It's just we're in this, right? We're in this world where the value of, you know, the same thing with the AI training, right? Where like one of the scenarios I warned the archive about was, what are you going to do when a company comes to you and offers you $200 million to digitize every undigitized book in your stacks? And they get to keep it for 5 years, and then you get to do whatever you want. So they will have done it. They will have funded the scanning of this old material, these old microfilms, these old whatever. I don't have an answer. I'm just like, it's better to be prepared to think of your response than to be on the phone looking across at three other people and you're bored going like, ah. And I think, you know, forewarned is forearmed. I'm sure I'm sure Emmanuel has a file folder, file cabinet full of contingencies. You know, when Condé Nast comes knocking for 2600, what are you going to do?
Yeah, we're ready for that day.
I figured you're ready for that.
Uh-huh.
Go up. You'll be on the eighth floor. You'll be living it.
Uh-huh.
It's weird to hear that that money making tactic, given that gaming now for a lot of what I think are new players, people that are on the current game systems, it's heavily monetized.
Yeah,
like in ways, the arcade, like putting quarters into a machine or pinball or whatever, like back in the day. It's now like credits. I think I never realized like the idea of like going and getting a game to have the disc to put in that Xbox 360 or whatever. That was one thing you would buy, or for a PC, you would buy the license. I mean, this is the genesis of cracked games and serial numbers and all of that. But now it's heavily monetized to where like gameplay requires $20 or whatever. Like young people are out there trying to get credits for PlayStation or whatever, and then someone does that to those, does linking like that, they think, well, this is just the way it works. Providing it cheaper or whatever for people to not to have an option as an alternative. It's cool to think that it might upend all of that to play retro.
It's funny, you know, we have flash versions of Bejeweled and a lot of PopCap and other things where, you know, and there's definitely a shift when games become like Candy Crush. I remember talking with Moot, actually, of 4chan, who knew some of the Candy Crush guys. And at the beginning of Candy Crush's life, like the first month or two, they were pulling in, I believe it was $1 million in monetization a day in the beginning. You know, like they were pulling in $1 million of, I want the special, you know, jelly bean. I want to pay for the extra whatever. And you look at all that and you're like, I wish somebody would regulate this.
Yeah.
But then they don't. And of course, in the current setup, I don't see that happening. Right. I just don't see anything getting in the way of that. And, you know, it's destroyed families.
It's like gambling. For people who are not of gambling age, because where's the learning about financial literacy? Like, you're basically buying game systems over and over again, and whereas once you would buy it once and then play it until you're bored of it, I guess.
Right. Well, I mean, you run into these situations where, like, for example, DraftKings has kind of like I've watched some great videos on like how DraftKings methodically became accepted nationwide gambling and how they do it, and it's only a matter of time before DraftKings is doing wired gambling into consoles. I think we're just, you know, if not this generation of video game, the next generation, it'll be wired casino. You'll just get you'll just have what's it called, what's that dumb game with the, it's the one that they put in the hotel rooms when you go to Vegas. It's on the television, the numbers one. It's like you choose up to eight numbers, and
is it Keno or something?
Yeah, it's something. I think it's like Keno. It's the one where if you actually win, they send cops to your apartment because, or your hotel room, because you've obviously running some sort of scam. I remember checking into a Las Vegas hotel, and they had a deal where you could give them $100, and they would just play the $100 for you against the Keno while you were doing other things, like, you know what I mean, like that. I'm always worried about that stuff where they weaponize human addiction. And, you know, and the funny part is with me, when you talk to me, you start seeing me going, but wait a minute, da, 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 da. I'm against any weaponization of human frailty and victimization for the purposes of acquiring power and capital. Like, I just don't think it's smart, right? Because you corrupt quickly. You quickly, it becomes, well, then, you know, it's like bug bounties. Bug bounties are a great idea until you start having somebody in the QA department tell the dev department to add a bug, and then the QA department guy finds it and they split the bug bounty, you know, or they add a third, you know what I mean? Like, it's just so easy because you've invented a money matrix on top of what should be a, you know, and it can happen anywhere. So for me, and again, this is my own personal opinion, I feel very good when something designed to extract an enormous amount of money out of you, and even more worrying about children or families, is available in an older cracked or beta version that is not taking money out of that family. I feel good about that. That feels like maybe they're learning the game, but they're doing it in a way that's not the kid wakes up, where the dad wakes up and discovers the kid has added $3,500 to the family credit card, and now they're not going to have a car. You know, I mean, this, you know, I really were, you know, should you teach financial literacy to children? Yes, you should. You should teach phishing and hoaxing and a bunch of other things. Did you know that hoax that went around? I think it went on for a few years now. The one where it's like, I had your webcam on and I recorded you.
I get that every day.
The first time I got hit with that, I read it really hard. And it was like, you know, if you don't give me some money, I'm going to, you know, give this to all your friends and family. And I was like, literally, I looked out to the window and looked back and was like, let's light this candle. let's do this. Let's do this. I'm ready. I'm ready to change my relationship with everybody in my friends list. Jason Scott's sex tape. Here we come. Let's go. It's my sex tape era. I was ready, man. But for a moment. You know, but I think, you know, you got to confront. It's like G. Gordon Liddy with the rat. You got to confront your fears, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Bring it. I'm going to dress for dinner, and I'm going to offer the buffet.
That is a healthy attitude.
I think that, like, those kind of scams, the ones that, like, prey upon you to be alone and fearful, or, you know, just the latest version of all that. But yeah, like, anything like this where I didn't have any kids, and a couple of my friends have kids, but I wasn't really, like, the cool uncle or anything. I always feel like, man, I wish that was the case, that I was like, look, I'm going to give you $100, and you haven't seen $100 in your whole goddamn life. You are 11 years old, and I'm not going to say anything, but I want to see what you do with this $100. And then we're going to talk about what you did with the $100 and what that means. Like, I'm like, that would be great. I would love that. I would love to find out, because I just feel like there are life skills. You know, people get conspiracy and they're like, da, da, da. I'm like, I don't even think it's that. It's just, we just don't teach financial literacy. My father wouldn't tell me what he made for, like, the first 35 years of his career that we shared overlapping. It was like verboten. So I didn't know it. And he was like a financial genius. And now we talk and he looks at me like I'm a mouth breather. I'm like, yeah, I'm thinking of investing in Intel. And he just looks at me. What? And, you know, and I'm like, well, Dad, when I was 15, could have taught me about compound interest, bonds, gold coins. But nope, 50 years old, Pop, and I don't know. Intel looks funny.
We are on with Jason Scott from Internet Archive, and we're going to open up phone lines. The phone number is 802-321-4225. That's 802-321-HACK. And you can ask your question or say whatever is on your mind. And Gila is our first caller. Go ahead, Gila.
Oh, that's very exciting. Hello. I just wanted to say hello to the 68 people who are in the chat with us right now. My numbers just went a little funky.
That's a lot for us. That's a lot for us, really.
It is a lot for us. And also, the general feeling in the chat is that our audio is amazing tonight. So I also agree with that, by the way. Everybody sounds fantastic. And people have had a lot to say. And I just wanted to share one specific thing, which is that our friend Funsox has called for a Jason Scott OnlyFans.
To which I have responded with my Jason Scott OnlyFans, which is archive.org, onlyfans.com/archivedaddy, which is currently, you can subscribe to it for free. There aren't any items. The main reason being, I went back and forth on this one, and I decided, but there's an interesting lesson in there. So, you know, like I own Archive Daddy, but one of the things I thought about was, I don't want any situation where there's any wedge with which for any groups or institutions or whatever to wedge in and go, look what kind of people they have. This guy's running a daddy archive thing. And so I didn't do it because I was like, okay, I think I could like really walk the line on it. I think it would be fun, but do I want to have my boss trying to answer a reporter or another doing it? He says, could I donate to your endeavor? I hope you mean the Internet Archive. That's archive.org/donate. If you want to donate to me, you know, donate to Archive Daddy. My PayPal is jason@textfiles.com, and my Venmo is textfiles. Feel free. But no, you know, and I was really, but I was, you know, the OnlyFans thing was a really good example of like, what I was saying before, I'm always like, well, what is this world? Is that the world now? People are doing OnlyFans and they, can I do a cheesecakey old guy fetish? Because I do get fans who write to me who are attracted to me, and I'm like, oh, I could maybe do a balance. I could do like a cute whatever. I'll do this, you know, I love, as anybody who's come to Hope knows, dressing up is what I love to do. I love sartorial suits and things, and again, the camera's not aimed in the right position, but I'll do it to them anyway, which is that you can see over here, you know, who in their office has all of their shirts and jackets ready to go just in case, you know? So like, that's the way I do it. I love buying beautiful outfits and having all these pieces. And so I'm like, maybe I could do something with it. How would I do it? And it just becomes a problem to solve. It becomes like, how would I digitize radio? How would I fix this problem here? You know, like that's just another thing. But then I got smart and said, there's too much identity attacks we see now. People go after it. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I would say we feel the same way, especially with all kinds of feedback and ideas for whether it's events or publishing. We get the input, or like you said, the contingencies for when the universe feels that you're a wounded animal or something and they move in, right? Like, there's plenty of ideas, but when you've worked on a thing, you feel a responsibility to your, you know, readers, your supporters, and it could be fun, but you can also say, like, you also have that obligation or check on yourself, like, but that's not what we do. And that's not what people would expect. And that wedge you're talking about is very real, especially the ways it's used against people really just doing honest things. And it also can confuse when we're actually appealing, saying, no, this is actually what we need. This is how you can actually materially help and be in alignment with what we do.
Yeah. And it's tough. It's tough because, you know, I mean, I know about the semi-successful but not longevity, you know, side beverage business. you know, and other approaches to like something like 2600, because, you know, you have an era, you know, the manual era. And then what happens? Do you do a turn in the road? Do you shift it? Do you go about it a different way? Do you fix this or do you do that? And every step you take, you're constantly balancing people who want nothing to change, people who can't believe you're not changed, people who read any legitimate attempt to go to the next level as a signal that you are no longer what the thing you were, and so on. And you're constantly battling that. And I think every institution, because now, I mean, 2600 Enterprises is an institution. There are people for whom it has been their whole life. Any change is traumatic, right? For them, that's their National Geographic. That's their, you know, New York Times. It has always been there. It has been there for decades before them. And they're, you know, some kid missed 9/11. He's 19. And he's always known about 2600, and he's always known that there's these hacker cons, and he's always known that computers can do this and that, but he's never touched C code, and he's never played with a phone box, and he does not understand why payphones are a thing, and he doesn't understand that bit. But he still feels like, I get kids who write me fan mail for textfiles.com who are like 15 years old. Like kids who are like 15 years old who are like going to textfiles.com, and to them it's like, it's like a historical reenactment village as far as they're concerned. It's like they're going to visit, you know, some 1800s village. And they're just like, wow, people just were like this? And I'm like, yeah, 35 years ago, but yeah. And that's always a mind. That's also why I've worked so hard to make it that you can just grab textfiles.com and put it up on someone's USB drive. Or put it into a local website or whatever. I'm like, make it your thing. Have a fun time with it.
And also, what I learned tonight, textfiles.es. Congratulations on getting that. That's a Spain domain, so I'm glad you got that.
Yeah, textfill.es. Textfill.es goes to textfiles. And yeah, that was just in case for some reason somebody passed a law or something and they just seized away my domain.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We want to come back to this institutional knowledge and even what, like, we've had these conversations internally. What is hacking now versus what it has been, what it was in its foundational, like, genesis? But we do have a phone call. I do want to let people talk to us. So do we want to...
Ray!
I hope we still have a phone call. They've been on hold about 10 minutes now. Sorry for all the delay. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
We hear you fine, or at least I do.
Okay, for Jason, I'd like to know, does the Internet Archive contain any old discussion threads from Usenet news groups, The Well or Echo, by any chance?
So, funny story there. All right, well, first of all, we have a lot of Usenet. We definitely have Usenet. So there's piles of Usenet. Now, there was a collection called the UT Zoo Collection. And the UT Zoo collection was up for a very long time, and that was like news files going back to like 81 up through like 89 or whatever. It was like almost a full grab of the non-binary news groups of Usenet. And I took it down because a guy and his lawyer were like subpoenaing us to have things taken out of it. And we were starting to do it. And I was like, you know what? This is bad. You know what? A bunch of people have grabbed it. So I'm going to take it out of circulation, but I'm going to leave up an indication that it exists. And John Gilmore just gave me some, before I took it down, I went to a bunch of people and said, grab this, get it out there, because I'm still me. But the UT Zoo collection, literally university, you know, tiger zoo collection of Usenet is like a really good early historical collection. We have Reddit. We have Usenet grabs from other websites that have done Usenet grabbing. Not so much the binaries. Binaries are always the nightmare. And I suspect over time people will hand us more and more of these. Again, this guy, I mean, this fucking guy so miserable. Like, just having it. And here's the thing. All the messages are boring. They're not even like it's not even something juicy. It's not like he threatens somebody or he's selling drugs or he calls himself something, or it's just literally like, I was using DR-DOS to make a format of this thing, and now it's a set of two drives and it's this. And he's like, I want it removed. And he's got the money for a lawyer. And I said, you know what? I would rather bring Streisand effect attention to the fact that this guy doesn't want people to see this and just take it. Just take it. So that's my, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll put it back up again with the stuff explicitly removed and let people be able to find it. These are the rubber hits the road. When the face hits the road stuff that I'm always like struggling with. But there's a lot of stuff out.
I can say that if someone... I can say that if someone is interested in the UT Zoo archive, it is findable without too much work.
Yeah,
on places that you're not responsible for.
And yeah, I see. Yeah, I was really cranky about it. Wow, I really was cranky. I put it up. I said this happened. Yeah, who are these people? I was really saucy that day, wasn't I? Ooh. But that's to encourage other people. Yeah, I see it's on IPFS and it's on a billion other things. And man, I understand the right to not, you know, there are so many different reasons why a person wants to change their past. And some of them are very legitimate, and other ones are, you really need to think this through. Like, I get why you're not comfortable, but you should think this through. And it ranges, right? And it ranges. And that's where we're always going to have those cases in the world of archiving, of preservation, of journalism, of historians, of support, of psychiatry. You know, you build a community, and in the community, there's somebody who is making the other members feel uncomfortable. How do you handle that? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with it? That's where we always run into like these difficulties and edge cases. It's not unique to anything at all. So that's you know, if you ever start something and suddenly like 6 months to a year in, you're like, well, guess what? It's everybody gets it. Everybody gets it.
Does that address all your questions, caller?
I just have one follow-up. Has sure. anyone uploaded PDF files of any out-of-print magazines at all, like, say, Utney Reader, Whole Earth Review, Factsheet 5, Gray Areas, or just any magazines? There's a lot of great magazines that don't exist anymore, and I just wanted to know, are there any online archives of those?
So we got a couple.
I'm sad to hear all those magazines aren't printing anymore. I honestly didn't know they were all stopped printing. Wow.
If you go to archive.org/details/magazine_rack or type archive.org, the magazine rack, you can console yourself with 500,000 issues of magazines over the last 120 years. So there's also computer newsletters. There's also fanzines. There's zines. They're all up there. That's one of my private personal projects, is to make sure as much of that is welcome as possible.
You know what I just realized? What I just realized tonight, though, being involved in a magazine, I believe you alluded to it, Jay. So what did that scene used to be called? It wasn't the magazine scene. It was something else. What was it?
Zines?
Zine, because you take away the what?
The mega.
Yeah. Very nice. We had this worked out decades ago.
You cooked that one up just now, didn't you?
I just realized it now. Yes.
One thing. Yes, sir.
Go ahead, Kyle.
One thing you were pointing out too. You showed me recently a list of all the technology current technology magazines
on Wikipedia. There's a list of American technology magazines.
But it's a handful.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, I think, I don't know, I'm theorizing the reason, but it is that all of this stuff has mainstreamed. It's become ubiquitous. The divide itself is less of a chasm. And essentially, there's been less demand for printed public, like, mm-hmm. state and publications
right.
that cover yeah. that in specific terms.
Yeah, but guess what they hold on to? Guess what people hold on to years later? They have printed magazines. They don't have the PDFs. You know, even though we have PDFs as well, basically the printed word survives through centuries. So that's interesting.
I would be very surprised to hear you have any other opinion on this, which is fine, by the way. I mean, I definitely think you should print until you go into the ground because mm-hmm. that's really worked out for you. Just like running my website without any CGI bin and having it be 100% static and having it stand at HTML 1.0 and still work in links and still work on old machines. And I don't run SSL on textfiles.com. It's working out for me. I have had more hackers who have been like, why isn't it SSL? And I'm like, dude, well, I love arguing with them, but I'm like, you know what? SSL, well, anyway, I love having people flip out about that. And I'm like, well, there's plenty of SSL mirrors of the mm-hmm. internet, of textfiles.com.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. It's out there, man. If you want to grab it, there's a billion ways to do it. But like, at this point, textfiles.com is so representative of a web that is, you know, so gone and was built at a time when I really thought there'd be a website for each thing. You know, oh, here's the BBS history website. Here's the telephone poles website. Here's the I want to go biking website. And I have a bike and I want to take care of my bike. And it turned everything just glorped into this current bizarreness. And I don't like it. I also don't guilt people or think that they're bad for using these new approaches. I'm like, but there are other ways. Just like, yeah, I mean, you really, I've always loved this about you, Emmanuel. I've always loved your relationship to staples and even when on, like, by my count, 20 different occasions, either your printer, your distributor, or a chain has tried to kill you.
Oh God.
You have been like, yeah, my counteroffer is I'm not going anywhere. And you're fired, and we're going to get back on there. Like, I've loved that. I've loved that. Not only do you fish without a lure, you have changed lakes, poles, you have changed everything, because you're going to fish.
We haven't had to service our pallet jack once since we bought it, and we are going to move paper until we need to. Yeah, and then we'll get it fixed and continue.
I want to thank the caller for their call. Our phone lines are open again, 802-321-4225. But, you know, on that subject, Jason, you know, I've noticed over the years that those publications that have advertising, those websites that have advertising, that survive on advertising, they're all surviving on a lie. Okay, and basically they have to convince people that more people are looking at their words than really are looking, that you need to pay us in order to be a part of that somehow. Whereas, you know, the publications and the websites that might be a bit old-fashioned, might not be as glossy and glittery, they're at least sincere, and they're at least more prone to tell the truth and to basically share their particular perspective for no other reason than they want to. They might not get to be millionaires by doing that, nor should they. It's basically communication. And that's I think, what we thrive on.
And you know, some version of the patronage system exists more than people know. There's a guy, and I really don't want to, I'm not going to make him findable, but he is famous for doing a major project that took many years and he has updated it. And it's not in print and it's not in computers. I'll just hint that. And he's worked on it for many years and he's worked on similar things for many years and he works really, really hard. And he was really getting, I could sense talking to him, he was a little lonely. So I brought him onto my, one of my areas that I chat with people. So he'd have other people to chat with, not people in his field, but people who also work on projects. And at one point I'm like, dude, how are you getting by? How are you? how are you able to get mayonnaise on your sandwich? What's going on? And he told me, I know there's a guy who owns a comic book store who just sends me the money for my rent. The project isn't in comic books. The project isn't involved at all in printed matter or anything. But this guy's like, the world needs you. So I'm just going to give you a few $100 or whatever, and you'll live in a dumpy apartment and you can do your work, and I will make sure that happens. And it just, you know, Don Joyce of Negative Land.
Oh, yeah.
I was involved in clearing out his apartment after he died. And I found out that, like, the landlord was going to demolish the building after we moved all the stuff out. And I found out he wanted to have demolished it 10 plus years ago. But he understood this is Don Joyce mm-hmm. of Negative Land and Over the Edge. And so he never raised Don's rent, and he just let him live there until he died and then demolished the building and did the renovations and the next step and all that upgrading, quote unquote. Like, that was like those conditions exist everywhere. And I really work hard to, like, let kids know, don't assume you're a failure because you haven't yet found yourself in a position that many people find. Like, there's people who just send me money to, like, buy equipment that I need. Like, it's not a case of, like, oh, Jason Scott does this, this, and this, and he gets that. It's like, sometimes people are like, you know what? We need to scan more of this. I'm going to send you $2,000. Go buy a scanner for this type of mm-hmm. material. People are out there all the time helping other people, and they don't want publicity, and they don't want mentioning, and they don't want to be highlighted. And you're not at fault for wanting to do something, and it's going to take a little bit to build that up. And, you know, I mean, we've all been there. So for me, you know, like I said, I love the whole, I love that 2600 comes on paper. I love it.
for those who don't know, by the way, Don Joyce was a member of Negative Land, and members of Negative Land were, or maybe still are, involved in a radio show called Over the Edge, which airs on our sister station, KPFA, in Berkeley. Jason, do you know if it's still on the air?
It is still on the air. Wobbly took it over.
Okay.
But it is, it's much less frequent now, but he still does it. So it's more like a testimony more than a thing. So instead of every week, mm-hmm. it is every, you know, few weeks. But he still does it, still does the theme, still does these amazing shows. And, of course, the archive has, oh, like 1,000-something shows of it.
I'd be surprised if you didn't have much more than that, because they've been on forever. And
right.
And their shows are 3 hours long, I think, on Thursday nights.
Right. So what happened with the archive is that we had somebody who had taken all the old air check tapes that Don had done. So we had like 1,050 or something. And then another family came along and said, we have a bunch from the 80s. And they digitized those. And so those are up. So it's archive.org details OTE. And that is tens of, you know, many thousands of hours of these shows. And they're amazing shows. Mm. They really are a really unique form of radio. And the archive has all of them up that we have acquired. And then every once in a while, someone will, you know, produce a new one or do a new piece or whatever, and it'll show up. Yeah. And
I was incredibly privileged once to be in their studio while they were doing a show back in the 1990s. And just, you know, seeing it all come together, Don was incredible with just the sound effects that he would just throw into the mix, and they would always work. Yeah, he'd have, you know, a bunch of carts, and he just it's like a collage of sound that lasted several hours, and the listeners were involved. They would open up the phone lines, and somehow the listeners were able to contribute just the right thing at the right moment. And it sounded like it was all planned and prepared, but it was just happening spontaneously. And it was true magic. It was really magic to hear that.
For a short time before I burned out on it, I was like writing descriptions for some of these shows. And by the way, it looks like it's going every Friday on KPFA at midnight.
That's so it's Thursday night or Friday morning or Friday night. Because it was Thursday night.
Yeah, good question. I think it's 12 a.m. on, it says 12 a.m. Friday, so it's probably, yeah, Thursday.
Okay, that's their traditional slot, so.
Bound Sound, and some of them may be reruns and some other things, but they're definitely still running, and we're keeping a lot of them. Don would do these shows, like, again, it's one of those things that's very hard to, like, for somebody who's never... Who for anybody who's listening to this on the old YouTube and they've never done it, going into the Over the Edge collection and choosing a show is like, you listen to it and it is absolutely out of this world, especially from the early 1990s before they were no longer able to add phone callers. So they were able to add phone callers. So they would wire in phone callers and throw them through crazy delays and things, and it would be like, there'd be a theme, it'd be like UFOs landing or visiting the beach, and he would have all these surf records and samples of people talking about suntan and sun cancer, and then also people who would just be let in and they would contribute to it, they would write in and they would do a whole, you know, piece about it. And my favorite thing listening to them was that sometimes it became really hard, especially towards his 60s, it became harder to get a hold of Don. So people would call him in his show because that was the way to reach him. And live, he's kind of conducting business. So in the background, you're hearing like a voice repeating going, surfing bird, surfing bird, surfing bird, surfing bird, and like the sound of these waves. And you're hearing Don talk to somebody and the guy's like, yeah, I'm supposed to bring the tapes over Monday. And he's like, yeah, you can do that. Try to do it between 2 and 5, 5, 5, 5, 5. And then the guy would be gone and it would be the next thing. And it was like, Don's just doing his email through the phone. People are calling in and like letting him know they're going to drop the stuff off or he's going to do whatever. Crazy.
Yep.
It was like, it was truly a treasure. And like I said, it was really nice to find out in the aggregate that his landlord understood the resource, the gift he had.
And that is a good landlord. Hold on to one if you have a good landlord, but not many people do. We have another patient phone caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, I have a question for you guys.
Make it quick, Rebel. Make it quick. It's a very busy night. Go ahead.
Yes, Scott. How does the archive?
His name is his last name is Scott. That's awfully rude to refer to him by his last name. I think you.
Dude, I have been called Jason and Scott.
Yeah, but I think he should say Mr. Scott to you. Okay, go ahead, Rebel.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Scott. And then there we go. I have a question for both you guys. How did you take websites, like old websites? Is every website on the internet on the archive? And how does that work? I mean, how do you, like, when, like, 2600, when it updates, do you 2600 give you guys the thing? Or
we don't do anything. He does all the, Internet Archive does all the work. It comes by and grabs our site, right, Jason?
Yeah, so the way that the Internet Archive Wayback Machine tends to work is one of two ways. So let's set it aside first for just how does the Internet Archive itself do it, which is we have crawlers. We have dozens and dozens of machines that every day, 24/7, are going out to websites. And we collect the URLs for those websites from news stories and social media postings and contributions from people who can put it into a form saying, hey, have you guys grabbed this? And if we haven't, we start grabbing it. And also like running through things like domain lists and so on and looking for websites. And then we do a crawl. And depending on our funds and power over the last 25 years, we will either do a very deep crawl. We'll grab every page going down to the bottom, or maybe we'll only grab the first three layers of a website. And then we put that into a list, and anywhere between 2 to 6 months later, we'd grab it again. Now, if we decide that certain websites are very dynamic or very historical, like government websites or the New York Times or the front pages of other news organizations, we might grab it 20, 30, 40 times a day, and it ranges. And the difficulty of knowing the web's current character and grabbing what is new and changed is why there are a dozen people spending all of their waking hours trying to solve those engineering problems. This year, the archive will have 1 trillion captures. That we know that's happening this year. So we are faced with an enormous amount of effort. So 2,600, you know, we might, if we go and look at the website on the Wayback Machine and I say to it, well, tell me about, you know, 2,600, it'll have a certain number. And it says, well, we've grabbed 10,378 times between October 18th, 1996 and March 2nd, 2025. And so I can see we're grabbing from them every day. Like I can just see they're grabbing, but I also see from just the way our system is designed, we're not finding much different. So we're grabbing it, but it's actually the thing. We might not have exact duplicate data day to day. Instead, we've said, yep, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. Oh, something changed. So I see here you guys changed stuff on February 1st, 4th, 10th, 12th. And
oh, we don't talk about that.
Yeah,
yeah. That was accident.
Jason, I can't tell you the number of times you've saved our ass when we deleted something we didn't mean to delete, and yeah, we found it on Internet Archive and grabbed it and put it back.
Like this year.
But, yeah.
Yeah, but this is a uniquely difficult technical problem. How do you track the Internet's changes? How do you decide what's important, what isn't? How do you deal with, and then I could sit here with like a 3,700 item list and say, how do you deal with blank? How do you talk about blah? You know what I mean? Like, it is an enormous engineering problem. It is probably one of the most difficult engineering problems out there, and we do not get it perfect. Now, there are other sites, archive.is, archive.today, archive. Is it CH or something? Many of them are run by individuals. Many of them are pseudonyms. Many of them are in weird countries. They are trying to be similar to us. They are tiny, and sometimes they will get things we don't. But we will always absolutely smear them in terms of size. I think there's at least something like 60 petabytes of data in the Wayback Machine.
I'm looking at archivebot.com right now, which you mentioned on the show, to see what's crawling. And boy, there's a lot of .gov sites that are being, including one I see, archives.gov. What's archives.gov?
Archives.gov is the National Archives, which just had its entire top half let go. That is, by the way, you want your civics lesson there, Emmanuel. Archives.gov doesn't just keep track of the archives. They keep track of the official presidential papers. They are also the ones who acknowledge whether or not we have added an amendment to the Constitution. You have to have the National Archivist agree that the Constitution has been changed, which is what Biden tried to do. And the archivist literally said, no. I don't agree.
Uh-huh.
But that was like a case where he tried to do it, and the archivist came back with like, no, it's got this other problems and these other things. That's the official archives of the United States. And yeah, Trump has modified a lot of the people at the top level now. He also believes he has access to papers that should be in the storage that he chooses not to. But no, that's what archives.gov is. And so we have been archived. That's how we've been able to keep track of like what, you know, obviously there's been some very, like I said, what I keep calling cartoon line, where like the Park Service changed the language on the Stonewall Monument. And we represent a way for you to easily see. We actually even have a changes feature to say what's changed between these two dates. And it will actually print like red and green stuff to say, oh yeah, look, they took this word out. So we do provide that. But is it perfect? No. And most people who know what they're doing know that. Like they look at it and they say, oh, they've only grabbed it 6 times last year. So we don't know what day this changed. We just know between October and July something happened. So it's an imperfect but often solitary tool. So that's how we do it, man. And of course, people can contribute from the outside certain amounts. We don't take full outside contributions, but we have organizations that we partner with and have them provide us stuff. It's a bear. It is It is not just a problem. It is the problem.
I see in this archivebot.com site, the very last one is mil.ru. Mil.ru, Russian military, I guess.
So, how's that going?
I don't know. It's the very last one. So maybe people are just grabbing that on a daily basis. But it leads me to another question. By the way, thank you to that caller. We're going to open the phone lines again. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. Jason, do you get .mil sites as well?
Yes, absolutely. Tons of mil sites from all sorts of countries and places, the equivalent of their military sites, but all the .mil sites that we can have. That's where we had that PowerPoint complex that I talked about.
Right, right.
If you even type it into the search, yeah, if you do a search for military PowerPoint complex, it will go immediately to the Internet Archives collection of, the military PowerPoint complex, military industrial PowerPoint complex, 57,000 ones that we found. If you go there, it looks like it says 1,217, but I think that's because if you go to some of them, it's like your collections of, yeah, it is. You go in and it's like, here's what the Marines have for PowerPoints. Here's, 500 PowerPoints from the Marines. Here's many from Fort Bragg, and they are so bad. Wow. They are so terrible. They're clearly made to fulfill, cross a check mark, a box off of like, did you give a talk about it? Yes. Yes, I did. I didn't like giving it. Nobody likes looking at it. Yeah. Wow.
Wasn't there one section of the internet that kind of closed itself off to the public? I thought it was part of the .mil domain or a TLD. Is everything accessible to us anymore?
Well, I mean, a website is often different than the government computers. I feel like with your audience, they know this, but like the public facing internet is like the gift shop as opposed to the bunker where they store the books. And people should understand that with a few exceptions, generally these websites are like the gift shops. Here's information on our place. Here's whatever. One thing we've been mirroring for quite some time is something called the CIA Reading Room, which is like millions of documents the CIA has put up, and clearly they decided to just dazzle them with everything because they've just put up so many documents. And I've got this kid who is just absolutely registered. He is grabbing hundreds of thousands of these things. And, honest to God, it's a real fun, great thing, that's happening. And there's some really cool, deep stuff in there. There's people who do FOIA requests. They put them up on the archive. We are the back end of CourtListener, which is the way to access court documents. They are all with us. Trying to think, is there anything else that's like people might not even know we're doing? We are the blind program. Like, copyright doesn't apply to books for the blind, and we keep copies of those books for the blind. So we do that.
I didn't know that. Copyright doesn't apply.
Yeah, it's an interesting quirk of copyright that you can, like, the blind are allowed to freely duplicate blind accessible books between each other. There's a system in place, I believe it's called DAISY, that you have to register. So it's a DRM encumbered situation. But yeah, it's like, where's your, you must have 2600 for the blind.
We don't, but we certainly support if somebody does that. Absolutely.
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised to find out in some way it's made. Uh-huh. You never know. But it's called DAISY. Okay. The DAISY format. And it's just a way to, it allows print disabled folks who are registered as print disabled to be able to read books, audio renditions and other renditions, or can be put on a Braille device. And if your eyes are really, you can be registered. We get into the whole thing, which I'm very happy this discussion happens now, which is disabled does not always mean gone. a person is not always visibly disabled. It's mm-hmm. not my arm is missing. I can't lift my arm. Or it's not I'm blind. I just can't see anything more than 2 centimeters from my face. And I need screen enlargers to understand that. So if you're registered as having as a print disabled reader, you can get access to many, 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 many books out there.
All right, we have.
And you know, the phone freaks have always had a little bit, you know, little dance with the blind. So I'm sure they all know this
We have another phone call. We're on with Jason Scott of Internet Archive, and good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, Sketch Cow. It's Cyber Geek. Do you remember me?
What was your handle?
Cyber Geek.
Cyber Geek. I can't say I do, but I'm sure.
No, Sketch Cow. I'm talking to Sketch Cow.
Oh, you're bringing that up now, are you? I've forgotten more than most remember, but if you're calling me Sketch Cow, you're an IRC dude, right?
We're talking Jay Dyson, Cancer Omega's.
Jay Dyson, rest in peace. Yeah. Jay Dyson ran a really great... Jay Dyson was a hacker who ran a mailing list. And what was the mailing list called?
And that was it was hosted on disk.org.
Right. And it was what he did was this guy created a mailing list that was like an open space for journalists and hackers to talk. And the idea was foster communication between these two groups, because then a journalist can say, you know, I'm hearing this, and some hackers could step in and go, you're calling that, but it's not that. And it was, the idea was to like prevent a lot of embarrassing print stories. And Jay Dyson ran it. And then
what did you get from me?
Dude, okay, I can cheat and say I think you said in the chat that you got some floppies. Did you give me the festival floppies?
No.
Oh, Caliban, did you give me any floppies?
Nuclear.
Nuclear secrets?
I discovered that Al-Qaeda was downloading parody information.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
What made you famous? Because you didn't tell anyone that you were running Rotten.com with the Bonsai Kittens until you printed that article, which got picked up by the New York Times, the London Times, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm hearing so many trigger words here. Al-Qaeda, Rotten.com, Bonsai Kittens.
For the record, I worked for Rotten.com. I did not create. I would never take the credit for Rotten.com away from Soylent. Okay. What a wonderful... God, what a wonderful, I sat with Soylent recently and Soylent was like, nobody remembers Rotten.com. And I went on to TikTok and I did a search for Rotten.com and I'm showing them shots of all these kids talking about their trauma for Rotten.com. And he was like, okay, fine. People remember. I don't want to.
I can attest that there is a Rotten.com mousepad holding up the layout and design trackball for 2600. So it's ever present.
Okay. I just wanted to remind Jason that whenever you talk about discovering the nuclear thing, you can tell everybody that my name is Bobcat and everyone in this room knows me.
Okay. You got it, buddy.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call. Take care. That's right. He calls us sometimes. That was kind of weird. It was like an episode of Lost where you realize, wow, this person is actually also that person. that's the magic of the hacker world, isn't it? All right, let's take one more phone call because boy, we've been at this a long time. But it's Jason, we could talk to you all night long. I don't know what motivates you to talk to us, but boy, you have some interesting stories that people just love to hear. We're looking forward to having you at HOPE, which is happening in August this year, August 15th to 17th.
I'm so pleased I'm so pleased you're taking the leap. I hope it works out for you for like a yearly event, and that's just so much more intense. It makes it so much easier to suggest to people that they speak there, because then I'm not like, wait a minute, is it a HOPE year? Because you could speak at HOPE. And then by, 2 years in, you're like, wait a minute, I forgot all my things from 2 years ago. There was a there was a thing that I've always brought up with you, which is that since your college days, you have always been about the medium of radio and the medium of print. Mm-hmm. And there's been like a lot of people who, like, you know, in the eras beyond that, they've walked away from that, right? Like, they're not dealing with print or they're not talking about radio. But you've always found, the reason I love coming on this show is because this has been an honest, like, there's no, you're not running some crazy ersatz network of 47 things that try to sell me supplements 20 times an hour so that you can push for a second home in Malibu, or, you know what I mean? Like, you're doing this because you, like, want to wake up. You know, you and Kyle sit up and say, let's do the show, let's tell the story, let's do the thing, let's talk about what's new, let's get it out there. Somebody's out there driving, somebody's out there at their house, somebody's listening, somebody just, like, turned on the radio, like, what am I listening to? What's with this guy? And that's, and the same thing with the 2600s. What's this thing sitting on a bench in a college? What's this thing in this kid's shelf? What's my big brother keep subscribing to? This is kind of interesting. And seeing a world like that. So, of course,
mm-hmm.
of course, I will always support that.
Yeah, you know, it is magic. When I went to college at Stony Brook, that's where I got involved in radio. They had a great radio station there. They still do. I'm still involved with that radio station. Non-commercial, alternative thoughts, all kinds of different cultural inspirations. And I was involved in no less than four different publications on that same campus. And then that led to another one that allowed me to do typesetting for 2600. So it all kind of was kind of set right in front of me. So I've held on to those values because, you know what, they haven't been replaced with anything better.
Yeah.
There are alternatives, sure, but there are so many bad parts to those alternatives. And we still have the freedom to use this old technology and do something good with it and hope that there are people out there who appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like very much a case of I try to respect when somebody has what they're doing without looking over their fence at what they think are greener pastures, and that they're willing to destroy something amazing they do in pursuit of some made up. You know what I mean? Like, and mm-hmm. I've seen it too many times where it's like, okay, I've brought in a new crew, they're gonna help me. There's a really great YouTube video on plagiarism that HM Bobber guy, and you could see what it was that folks worked hard, built up an audience, people trust them, and then they get a little tired, or they're like, maybe I need to, like, earn money for this. Yeah. They hire outside people, and you watch the value of their reputation get mined like it's a pile of peat moss, and we end up with just bad memories. Yeah,
it's even well-intentioned non-hired people coming in because they think they know better and need to do it in what they think is the best way for the future. And this is something related to the conversation around institutional memory and charting a course, like what is needed, because we talk about this too, about how kind of diluted the word hacking has become. There's people doing like drive-through hacks and, you know, everything is a hack on social media or anywhere. So the way it's transformed or mainstreamed, and I think some of our past speakers have talked about like the punk club no longer being punk. We are still pretty diehard at doing what we do, and we're at the same time we're needing to share that institutional memory to people that will not, like you say, kind of even in like non-hired, like well-meaning ways, try to chart a course that actually isn't aligned with what has been, even if that isn't what is needed. Like if hacking is like no longer a mystery, no longer something hackers want to know about or that we wanted to share about, then okay, then maybe that it is just, you know, like you said, 40 diet pills or whatever, you know, and that's the destiny. But it isn't necessarily like the urgency is to get get people interested in what the spirit of what was. I had the great honor of sharing with you and the founder of the magazine, Dave, and hearing about the progression on campus, your jobs, your relationship with him, and that in that kinship, the spirit you had. It was great. I want to get more of this captured. We'll definitely have to have more conversations on tape. But it was so interesting to hear also about the antics, the pranks you got up to, because you were using the means of production to reserve the right to confuse on campus, shall we say.
And
that was so beautiful to see it being the practice run for an actually quite serious publication, which we know today.
Well, how serious? Yeah, there's serious moments, but certainly there's a lot of levity as well. But yeah, I mean, you know, as long as there are people around to appreciate these things and to contribute as well and be a part of it, it's going to survive. And that's what's kept us going in so many different forums. You know, the conference won't exist if people don't come to the conference. The magazine won't exist if people don't read the magazine. The radio show won't exist if people don't support the station. So as long as there's people out there that do all of that, then we can keep doing what we love to do. And, you know, there's really nothing more that we need than that. And that's the magic of it. I just wanted to give out the website for the Hope Conference, because I didn't do that before. Hope.net for people that are interested. And if you want to give a talk, great. I believe our initial deadline, we haven't announced this yet, but our initial deadline is the 17th of March for speakers. Now, it's not going to close after that, but that's the initial deadline, which means if you've submitted something and we confirm it, it's going to be on the schedule. Even if we get, you know, 200 more talks, we're not going to bump your talk for another one because you got it in early. So that's the advantage for that. All the information is on hope.net. But mostly we need people to spread the word. And let's make this, as Jason said, an annual thing. The idea of making it an annual thing is that it becomes kind of a habit. Like every year, there's a hope. Every year, we can have these traditions build. It was great having it every 2 years. In the hotel, it was much more difficult because, you know, Manhattan and all kinds of really rapid fire decisions that had to be made in the hotel. Here we're on a campus. It's a lot more spread out. It's a lot more laid back. The people there actually have technology that works and they support what we're doing, and we can do a much better job at it. And we've made it super easy for people to get to. So that is the magic. But for that magic to exist, we have to be strong. We have to have a bunch of people that volunteer, that give presentations, that do workshops, that run villages, and of course attend, because that's what it's all about. And then we can keep doing all kinds of things in this period where I think we've never needed it more than now. So I really, really hope this is the year that everybody comes together and helps build a really positive community.
Yeah, we really want to get as much input, and we welcome ideas, feedback. What kinds of things are people talking about? We are living in a time that is incredibly fragmented, and it would be really nice to hear a lot more conversation. We want to know what are people interested in. What do you want to hear about? What do you want to discuss more of, instead of just what everyone else is deciding hacking is? Anyway, there's a phone call waiting. If you want,
okay, let's take this one last phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. They waited all that time to hang up?
Yeah!
They just hung up.
Heck
now.
Yeah! Okay. That's dedication to the bit.
Wow. Well, you know, that's people do dedication. That. People do that.
I tried.
I've been doing call-in shows for a long time, and people have held on for a half hour just to either say a single word or to hang up. But you know what? That misfortune is someone else's benefit, because you can call in right now. You have a minute to do it. 802. Never mind. I won't give out the rest of the phone number. Let's take this phone call. And you are on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Speak up. Is anyone there? Kyle, do we have a caller? Can you hear us, caller?
It's the same caller.
The same caller. Well, caller, you have a problem with your microphone on your telephone. So don't call us again until you fix it.
Or I assure you, we're just like you.
we put our pants on one leg at a time, like everybody else.
Is it
you're not in you're not in the you're not in the lead you're not in the you're not in Mount Olympus with the gods.
Let's give them one more chance.
You're at the diner with the hackers. Go ahead.
Let's give them one more chance. It's the same caller. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi.
Oh my God. You got it working now.
Yes, I got it working now. Okay. I did not hang up on you. I pressed the button and it went off for a moment and then came right back on and I heard you talking. But then you hung up on me after you thought I'd hung up.
We did not hang up on you. We have witnesses. But never mind. Let's get past this. What's on your mind?
Okay. Are you, I hope, familiar with Pacifica Fightback?
There's always a fightback going on at Pacifica. I'm not sure what this one is.
Pacifica Fightback is an organization that has been going on for, many years. Michael Novick, and distinguished anti-racist, got the following notice from their hosting provider. We are contacting you on behalf of the Namecheap Legal and Abuse Team regarding your Namecheap account. It has come to our attention that there is a high number of similar emails queued on the server by the Unhorrukb hosting account. Please be informed that we have disabled the PHP function in order to prevent further misuse. It seems that the emails were sent automatically from the account with each automated request in order to avoid the issue from being repeated in the future. It is suggested protecting your website from automated requests using anti-spam software, e.g. CAPTCHA. Please start by protecting the following form. You may find
I think Rob has something to input here. Let's, Rob, what do you have on this?
Yes, Eleanor, you had sent us this. You had forwarded us this in an email, which I was actually drafting a reply to you. But basically what's going on with that is something that Michael had on his website, which was doing something that was putting stress on the system. And there is nothing anybody outside the situation can do. This is something that Michael has to work out with his hosting provider and whoever, if anybody, is doing his website work. It is a completely internal thing, and none of us out here are able to help with that.
He doesn't really understand everything.
Yeah, so what Michael needs is the services of somebody who does know this stuff, but that's not a service that we can provide, and certainly not over the space of the span of a phone call or an email. This is, like, something that he needs to get looked at.
Okay, well, thanks for getting back to me with that information.
Okay, best of luck to that.
Even if it wasn't good.
Well, sometimes that's how it works out. But thanks for your call and for looking out for people. That's important. And I think that's going to do it for phone calls tonight. Jason, any other? We don't want to take your whole evening up here. But anything else that you want to share with us or thoughts, opinions?
Well, I'll tell you. I like to think, as an older gentleman who's been involved with telephone calls all his life, you know, I thought I had that strength, that armor built into me. But, man, being told that your phone call was not good. Recovery's a road one step at a time, sir. And I'll be beginning that journey. May we have many more not good phone calls in our life to look forward to. Thanks to everybody on the stream. It was very fun to watch all of your comments go by. What's going on there? And of course, like I said, all of you, Kyle Emanuel and everybody else, you're all a gift to spend time with. People won't know that, like, I got the flu and then I had, like, a persistent cough. And it was like, Jason can't do it this week. Oh, but now we're not doing anything this week. So I'm glad we stayed persistent.
Yes.
And we were able to make this happen. And I hope the time between now and the next time is much, much, much shorter.
Yes, we've been trying to do this interview for a month now, and I'm glad we finally did it. But we always have something to talk about. And Jason, we look forward to seeing you at Hope, obviously, and that you'll be super involved in that. You always make every room more fun to be in if you're in it.
Yep, so. I am.
I am the master of the uncomfortable silence and the long pause. I'll be ready for it this year as well.
You know, I just want you to describe one thing, because this isn't apparent on the video, but you were giving a talk last year at Hope, and at one point you just stop and make a comment about maybe being assassinated at this moment. Because something very weird happened at that moment. Can you describe that for everybody?
Oh, did you know, or did you just want me to share?
Oh, I know. I was there. I was there, yeah. But I don't think people who get the video would know what it was.
So if people happen to find this video, and it's about, you know, how to deal with an ever-shrinking legacy, and it's a memorial for great people like Cheshire Catalyst and Ed Pisker, but also literally, and, you know, I usually am pretty smooth with things happening in front of me and stuff happening around me and so on, but, like, there was a group from another country who had clearly bought group tickets to come to the Internet Security Conference. Like, they were dressed as if they were going to an Internet Security Conference. So while I'm talking out on the podium, I just suddenly see, like, what was it, like 15 dudes dressed formally, slowly filing in, and I got a real elevator in the Avengers movie feel. Just like more and more and more of them. And then finally I'm like, is this it? Is this how I go? Is it just all? Because, I mean, they were clearly not overly interested in me. Like, they were sitting down clearly because it was like, now we go to the show and now we sit down in the lot. But it wasn't about my talk or my subject. And yeah, you see me literally brain freeze, because the limbic part of my system is like, dude, just so you know, your audience has just changed. There are 15 young gentlemen dressed really formally sitting down in groups, staring you down.
Jason, it was more than 50. We had 70 people from that particular group.
Wow.
And they were moving around together a lot of the time.
Yeah.
They all had the same haircut, which was basically no hair. And they all dressed very similar. So when they started filing in, and there was more than 15 that were filing in, it was probably at least 30 or 35. It did look scary because they were all filing in exactly the same way. And it was.
Yeah, and they were all quiet because they didn't know what I was talking about.
They were very polite. They were very polite. There were no problems at all with them, but it was just, it was something to behold. I forget, Kyle, do you remember what country it was they were from? Was it UAE or something?
I feel like Qatar. It was UAE.
Qatar?
It was UAE or Qatar, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
It was a bunch of people, which, bless them, I'm sure they paid for, you know, some of the, you know, paid for some of the conference and helped it. But, man, that is not something you, like, I was, that particular talk was about people who were gone. So I was trying to be very respectful of them, and I was making sure I wasn't misphrasing who they were. So my mind was like way up in the clouds. And then I looked down, and it is literally just rows of people filling in like 25 minutes in. And I'm like, no. That is like tapping at the glass at the third floor. That is like, I can hear a door creak. I can, the powers are going off across the street. What's going on here, buddy? And luckily, it was cool. But also, like, they just got up and left. Like, they didn't chat with me. They weren't like, wow, we've really had our minds changed. It was just off they went. Yeah, that was a good moment. And I'm sorry that it doesn't come across on the...
You know, I haven't seen the video myself. I don't know if the camera operator was on top of it and actually.
No,
there's no wide shot. So in case people watched that talk and wondered what Jason was referring to, that's what he was referring to.
Yeah, that's where it is.
All right, well, Jason, I hope we have moments like, well, maybe not exactly moments like that, but magical moments that we remember and fun times at Hope this summer. And I think August is going to be a fun time to do it.
I think that what I really love about Hope is that Hope assumes people first, technology second. And so it really comes across when you're there watching the event. You know, I think of like the electronics anarchists who are like running their own little shop in the corner of like all these people working together. And then you go to another spot. You know, actually, I did talk about you on my podcast. Because I was impressed with the classrooms.
Oh, yeah,
Like, for this HackerCon, it's like, look at us over here. We're kind of freaky. I'm going to talk about this and that. I've actually got my talk idea. I have to submit it. It'll be like fun, goofy, humanist talks. But then you go up there and it's somebody talking like with actual lab equipment and people like doing labs and like discussing technical issues. So it's like, look, if you want to go into a cinder block room and for 60 minutes or 120 minutes become knowledgeable in a structured manner that doesn't have a drink on the podium and isn't about whatever, there's room for you there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's amazing to me. I love that for some people, they want to go to a class and there was space for them too. So there's like room for everybody. It's not, if somebody comes there and doesn't feel welcome, they got to ask a hard question about how they deal with people, because they really, the arms are really open at Hope. I can't stress that enough. So really, I hope to see you there.
It's
I'm great, the guy in the
great
suit.
Great to hear that. one of a few people in suits, but
yeah.
We try to make it as inclusive as possible, as welcoming as possible. And, you know, you can stay on campus in a dormitory. I think the price was $78 a night to stay in a dormitory, which is really pretty good.
Yeah.
And then there's a hotel down the street as well. So there's all kinds of options, but it's just, it's a fun time. It's a fun weekend. It's kind of like camping out in the middle of Queens, but all sorts of fun activities. And how good it gets, that depends on you. We can keep growing as much as people want to grow, because it's a huge place.
Yeah.
And right now we have really good buildings set up where we can do all kinds of fun things. So.
Oh yeah, anybody who didn't go last time, but they went the time before, you've basically built a hacker town square.
Yes.
And I love that.
Yeah.
Hey, what's up?
Yep, just wander from one building to another and chat with people along the way.
What's the question?
Sorry, we do have a listener question, which is Jason going to be hosting Hackers Got Talent?
I don't see any situation where I'm not hosting Hackers Got Talent. Mm-hmm. It's only if I'm sick, dead, or there's no hope.
Or there's no talent.
Yeah, or there's no talent.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see.
No, I don't
think
so either.
Again, more info, hope.net. That's where all the info is. And you can write to us, oth@2600.com, if you have further questions for Jason. He is reachable. Your email address again, Jason, is what?
Jscott, jscott@archive.org. Let's use that one tonight.
And anybody out in Signal Land, any final words for Jason or for anybody else?
Just thanks for sticking with us this on a longer than usual episode of Overtime.
Yeah.
Oh, the time just flew by. It really did.
This is a record for us, I think.
Is it? Oh, my God. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Only on the records.
Thank you, everybody, for listening and for being a part of things. And we will see you again soon.
Bye.